This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
This is our Shabbos table today, which is important, and which is the question that I'm going to start out with. That is the question of, is it perhaps possible that halachic decisions made by Gedolim are influenced by their general environment and their approach? We know clearly that that's not the case, and that the very purpose of halacha is a method of working out, independent of one's own inclinations and one's own environment, what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants from one. But then comes the question that obviously applies to a Talmid Chacham of some stature. How does one know oneself when one is in fact being honest to that principle? And how does one know in others? When there's a person, there's a Gedolim, one knows. There are people, there are Amaratzim, one also knows. But in between, there's a grey range of people. And how does one know if one hears an opinion from them as to whether the opinion is one which is true to halacha, or one which has been influenced by their own attitudes and environment? To answer that, I'm going to ask another question which is connected with Lag BaOmer. The famous Gemara on which Lag BaOmer is based, Omru, they said, 12,000 zugim talmidim hoyu loy l'Rabbi Akiva, migavat ad antikras. This is in Yevamos Daf Samech Beis Amud Beis 62b, that Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of Talmidim, 12,000 chavrusas of Talmidim, that's 24,000 Talmidim, and they occupied the area from Gevat right to Antiklas. The Chulon Mesu Beferek Echod, and they all died during one period, because they didn't show respect to one another. The Hoya Ha'olam Shomim, and the world was desolate. We got a little bit depressed this afternoon. A few minutes ago, listening to the desolation of the world, it's happened before. The world was desolate. There was nothing. Abchebor Rabbi Akiva to Rabbi Seinu Shevedolim. Until Rabbi Akiva came to our rabbis in the south. In the south. That's where it all starts. Veshona Lohem, and he taught them. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. Vehem the Torah. And they were the ones who re-established Torah. So the Torah we have today is not from the 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, but from the 5 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. It was all cleared up. It all disappeared. And we started again from scratch with 5 Talmidim. And that's where we've got our Torah from. It's incredible. But that's not what we're going to talk about this evening. I want to ask the two obvious questions. The first question is, what chance do we have? If 12,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva is on Talmidim of the boys in the first year that we just heard about, they're not Talmidim of boys in the second shir that we just heard about, or young men in the third shir, or even in the fourth shir, when the Shiva's hands used to tremble at them, for the young man from the fourth shir asked the kasher, not Talmidim of those, but Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, and they're wiped out because lo yinahag b'tovid yedid. They didn't treat each other with the necessary respect. So what was all the Torah doing? What was the effect of the Torah? If Rabbi Akiva couldn't teach his Talmidim to handle each other with respect, what chance is there that anybody else can teach their Talmidim? The question obviously is, what went wrong? And how does one prevent the same thing going wrong again? And how could it have gone wrong? How is it possible that with people of this stature, not only the stature of Rabbi Akiva, but obviously he didn't just take anybody to be a Talmid. It must have been the cream of the cream that were Rabbi Akiva's Talmid. How is it possible that with the cream of the cream learning under the direction of Rabbi Akiva, we can have a situation where they're wiped out? The second question is, why do they have to be wiped out? Okay, it's wrong. Got to treat one another with respect. To wipe out a whole generation of Talmidei Chachamim because they didn't treat one another with respect. There are many avodas that could have taken place. There's been a Chal Shabbos, not eating kashrus, a bit of Lashon Hara here and there. We've never heard that for those things anybody's wiped out. Yisurin, maybe one suffers, there's punishment, but that a generation of Talmidei Chachamim are wiped out for other avodas, never heard of it. Here, one particular avoda. They didn't treat each other with honor and respect. That's all. There's a similar concept in the destruction of the second day Samitash, where it was destroyed, we're told, because of sin as chinuch. unnecessary hatred among people. They dislike each other unnecessarily. And we have a similar concept where we see vast consequences for what would appear to us to be one of the minor requirements of Torah. Yeah, sure, one should be married to Eretz, but if one doesn't show that Eretz to other people, is that the end of the world to the extent that you have no right to exist? You and your chavrusas and the whole generation has no right to exist, if that's where the Torah is going to lead. This is what people have to understand. What I want to show you in this is that there's, in fact, an inherent trap in Torah. The trap is, by the very nature of Torah, and this is what we're going to show during the shiur this evening, that by the very nature of Torah there's a trap, and the trap is this one. The greater you are in Torah, the greater is the tendency not to respect others, and it has to be consciously fought. One has to consciously work on one's ability and on the necessity to honor other people. Other middos one develops through Torah. This middah one also develops through Torah, but it has to be very, very consciously worked on, because there are certain aspects of a Torah life which tend to make it difficult for one to observe this middah. And we'll see exactly how. I'm sorry I missed my favorite sedra last week. I didn't realize that both Tazria Mitzorah and Achrei Mes Kedoshim were joined this year. And I planned a holiday for the Sedra of Kedoshim, which I never did. So I'm going to take the liberty of referring back to it. There's a section in towards the beginning of Kedoshim which deals with the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. It's a beautiful section that deals with interpersonal relationships. It goes right through, you mustn't steal, and you mustn't lie, and you mustn't swear falsely, etc., etc. You've got the famous Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshul, you mustn't mislead people. So it goes on. And then, just before it reaches its climax, it says, Lo Sikoim Velo Sito. You're not permitted to bear revenge, to take revenge, and not permitted to bear a grudge. You're not even permitted to remember that somebody did you wrong. You've got to forget about it. It's got to be forgotten. But Lo Sikoim Velo Sito Res Bnei Amecha. You're not permitted to take revenge or to bear a grudge against the sons of your nation. And here the climax of Ahavta, in the same sentence, for Ahavta L'Reyacha Kromoicha, you must love your neighbor as yourself. Ani Hashem, I am the Lord. One has a picture of the man who's living according to all these principles, particularly the end. The most beautiful picture of a human being. You can hurt him and he forgets about it. You can damage him and he forgets about it. And he doesn't even bear a grudge, there's nothing. You see him the next day after you've done him harm, and he's with you as if nothing happened. And not because he's trying to be smooth, not because he's trying to achieve something or to get something from you, but because he genuinely has forgotten all about it, it just didn't matter. And not only that, but the Ahavta L'Reyacha Kamoicha, he loves you, he's interested in your welfare, he wants to help you, anything he can do for you, he'll do for you. The kind of a human being. And it tallies with our picture of a tzaddik. That's our picture of a tzaddik, a beautiful person. No matter what you do to him, he can't harm anybody. If he doesn't harm anybody. If I asked you who among all the characters of the Gemara, Tanoim and Amiroim, epitomized this person, what would you say? Des, you're studying the Amiroim and Tanoim. Who would you say? Of all the Tanoim and Amiroim, you know, who epitomizes this concept? First off, who's the first one? I think he said it. Hillel, right? Hillel. Hillel's the one. Don't forget that when the Goy wanted to convert and he came and wanted to learn the Torah while standing on one leg, the famous story in Gemara Shabbos. But let's take a look at Hillel under the magnifying glass in another situation. There's a Mishnah in Pesachim that the beginning of the sixth parak, the Samachay Amud Beis, that the bringing of the Korban Pesach is Dorcha Shabbos, that the laws of Shabbos do not apply as far as bringing the sacrifice of Pesach is concerned, if Erev Pesach should fall on a Shabbos. Tanu Rabban, the Gemara says on Samach Vav Amud Aleph 66a, Halacha zu nis'alma b'nei b'seira. B'nei b'seira were the Nesim, they were the heads of the Yeshiva at this particular time. They were the people. We've discussed the concept of the Nesim a few times. They were the people who sat at the top and led the discussion and led the debate of the Talmidei Chachamim at that time. Halacha Zun is Alma b'Bnei B'Seira. This halacha somehow disappeared. B'Bnei B'Seira, the Nasim, were asked, what is the din? It was obviously a case where such a thing was about to happen. And the Shaila was asked of the B'nai B'Seira, can we do all the normal things one needs to do for the Korban Pesach, even though it's Shabbos? Pa'am achas chala abe'er sal yos b'Shabbos. It happened once that the 14th fell on Shabbos, with the Erev Pesach. Shochechu v'lo yodu im Pesach doiches ha-Shabbos in love. And they forgot, they didn't know whether Pesach, don't forget, they didn't have a Mishnah, they didn't have a Gemara, there was nothing written down, they had to rely totally on their memory. What did their Rabbein say about such a case? They forgot whether the Korban Pesach can be brought even though it was Shabbos or not. Amru klum yesh adam shiyodea in Pesach doiches ha-Shabbos in love. So they announced, they sent messages around the yeshiva. Is there anybody here who knows the din as to whether a Korban Pesach is doiches Shabbos or not? Amru lohem, they said to them, Adam echad yesh she'olo mi bavel v'hilal habav lishmoy. There's one man who's come recently, he's immigrated from Bavel, and his name is Hillel. So he's obviously a completely unknown character in Israel. There wasn't terribly much communication between Bavel and Israel at this time. And there's a lot of discussion whenever somebody does take the jump of emigrating one way, particularly when it was from Bavel to Eretz Israel, they used to be very worried. Firstly, the style of learning was different. They would have a period of adjustment. And after a period of being well known and well accepted in Bavel, they came into virtual anonymity in Israel, even somebody like Hillel. It was unheard of. So they said, yes, there was a man, Hillel Bavli Shemo, he's Hillel the Babylonian, Sheshime Shnei Gedolei Hador, who's had experience serving under two great people of the Dor, Shemaya V'Avtalion. They've heard about Shemaya V'Avtalion, of course, V'Yodea in Pesach Doiches HaShabbos Im Lav, and he knows whether Pesach is Doiches HaShabbos or not. Sholchu V'Korulo, they sent for him and they called him. Amrulo, and they said to him, Klimata Yodea in Pesach Doiches HaShabbos Im Lav, do you really know whether Pesach is Doiches HaShabbos or not? So he answered them, and he works out, which I'm not going to do with you, that there's no question that Pesach is Doiches HaShabbos, no question about it. What did the people do? And more particularly, what did B'nai B'Seira do? It's a terrible embarrassment. They are the Rosh Yeshivas, they are the Nesiim, everybody looks up to them to know what's going on, they give direction, they make the decision, and an anonymous man from Bavel that nobody's ever heard of before has to come and tell them what the din is for this Pesach, and it's right before Pesach, and they don't know what to do, and they have to rely on Hillel who's come from Bavel. There's nobody in Eretz Yisrael that they can find who can help them out. Miyad Heshivihu Berosh Minuhi Nosayonim. Immediately the B'nai B'Seira resigned, and they said Hillel has to take over. Immediately Hillel took over and he started teaching them Hilchos HaPesach. Now look at this. So you think Hillel, in order his modesty, Hillel is the epitome of modesty. We're told to take an example from Hillel for modesty. This is the image of the man we've just been talking about in Kedoshim. Could you possibly hurt Hillel? Could you possibly offend Hillel? They tried. They used to have experiments to see whether you could get Hillel angry, and nobody ever succeeded to get Hillel angry. And now Hillel, all of a sudden, in a moment, from being anonymous in Eretz Yisrael, becomes a Nasi. He's now the president, he's the head of the whole situation. Yitzchil Mekanter and Bidvorim start teasing him. It's time to start teasing him. They feel as embarrassed as anything. They just had to resign. There's nobody in the whole yeshiva who can answer the problem. Hillel has just made Rosh Yeshiva, so accept it graciously. Say thank you very much and get on with the work. Yitzchil Mekanter and Bidvorim start teasing him. Omar Lehem, and how did he tease them? Not by the color of their socks or something irrelevant. He says, you know who caused my coming from Bavel and being your president, being your head? It's not very nice, is it? You're a Babylonian. You've always felt that your learning is superior to the learning in Bavel, that yours is the real thing, that we don't quite know what we're doing over there compared to the standard of learning here in Eretz Yisrael. Not very nice to get an anonymous fellow from Bavel that you've never heard of before, and now he's your Nasi. You know why it is? Because you're all lazy. Because you never went to learn under Shmaya V'Avtalion. That's why it's incredibly strange. Hillel, of all people, starts, he's just received an honor from them and he returns it with a backhanded slap. It's worse than Noi Kain V'Noi Tarek would have been. Noiten is to give someone a bad turn when he's given you a bad turn. Certainly to give somebody a bad turn when they've given you a good turn, that's even worse. And in fact the Gemara tells us, Omer lo, Rabbi Shochach. Amrulu, Rabbi, they said to him, Rabbi, Shochach v'loi hevi sakin me'er of Shabbos mahu. Okay, you're so clever. What happens if it happens that it is Shabbos Erev Pesach and they forgot to prepare the knife, they forgot to carry the knife, the chalif with which they're going to shech the animal, they forgot to bring that to where the animal is? Now that's one of the things you can't do on Shabbos. You can shech the animal on Shabbos, but you can't carry the knife to shech the animal. Mahu, what do you do then? Omar lahen halochazu shamati b'shechach. Hilal now, he says, I heard this thing once, somebody discussed it once, and I forgot it. Eloha nachlein v'yisrael, now they're really stuck, what do you do? In ein neviim, hein b'nei neviim, and if the b'nei Yisrael are not neviim, they're the sons of neviim, and they'll be able to work out themselves what I must have learned on this matter. L'macha, as it happened, Misha poscha tzleh tzochva b'tzimve, Misha poscha tzleh tzochva b'en karnav. As it happened, a couple of people did forget their knives, inevitably, were stuck. What do you do now? Nobody knew the answer, and there wasn't time to ask in any case. So the ones who had sheep with the long fur put the knives in the wool and let the sheep carry the knife to the place, and the ones who had goats put the knife in between the horns and let the goat carry. And Hillel afterwards says, in fact, now that I see it, that's exactly what I heard you should do. I won't go into why the halacha is such and what it is. All we see is an incredible situation of Hillel of all people teasing somebody at a time when they feel very small as it is, almost taking advantage of their embarrassment publicly. Hillel, the modest one, Hillel, the one they could never get angry, Hillel, the one who said, "My desani lach lechavecha atavi, don't do to others what you don't like done to yourself." And look what he does to you. We see that a Talmid Chochem particularly, but a Jew, has to live a very funny sort of paradoxical life. We'll see a little bit more of it. I'll give you another example. This is the famous Gemara. This is the other way around. Maaseh, this is Gemara, Brachos Kavzayin Amud Beis, 27b. We learnt in the Braisa, Maaseh b'Talmid Echad Shebol Lifnei Rabbi Yoshua. The Talmud who came and asked Rabbi Yoshua a shayla. Omale, he said to him, Tfilas arvis reshus or chayva? Is Ma'ariv, are we obliged to daven Ma'ariv, or is it a tfilas reshus? We may daven Ma'ariv, it's very good, it's a mitzvah to daven Ma'ariv, but we're not obliged. Omale, so Rabbi Yoshua answered him, reshus. It's reshus, it's not a chiyuv, you're not obliged to daven Ma'ariv, it's a good thing to do, but you're not obliged. Bolit me Rabban Gamliel. So he was very naughty. He asked two rabbonim in the same shayla. He went to Rabban Gamliel, who was the nosi, like the Beseira were, that the Bnei Beseira were in the previous sugya. Now Rabban Gamliel is the nosi, and they asked him, "Omale tfilas arvis reshus ochoiva?" And he asked him the same shayla. Is Ma'ariv the reshus ochoiva? Omale choiva. Omale v'alo Rabbi Yeshua omale reshus. So he said to him, "You know, Rabban Gamliel, it's very strange. Rabbi Yeshua said to me that it's reshus." Hang on, just wait for all the time that they come and get together in the Beis HaMedrash now. We'll see what's going to happen. Just to give you a bit of the background, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabban Gamliel had a lot of trouble together. Rabban Gamliel was the Nosi. One of the other famous stories of the relationship between Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua is that they worked out different Rosh Chodesh dates, which resulted, of course, in Yom Tovim falling on different days. Rosh Hashanah was going to fall on different days, and Yom Kippur was going to fall on different days. Rabbi Yeshua worked out that a certain day was Yom Kippur, and according to Rabban Gamliel, it was the next day, not that day. And Rabban Gamliel instructed Rabbi Yeshua to come and visit him, which was a long way away, bringing his stick and his wallet, on the day which, according to Rabbi Yeshua, fell out to be Yom Kippur. In other words, Rabban Gamliel was instructing Rabbi Yeshua, "I know that the way you've worked it out, Yom Kippur falls on Wednesday, let us say. On that very same day, you're pleased to meet me at my house at such and such a time, carrying your stick and your money." And Rabbi Yeshua came. Rabbi Gamliel was the Nosi, he was the head. And although Rabbi Yeshua calculated that to be the day, there was an instruction from Rabbi Gamliel, and he went. And Rabbi Gamliel called him Rebbe the Talmidi. "You're my Rebbe," he says, "b'chokhmah, because you know more than me, you're wiser than I am. And you're my Talmid because you listen to me." So you see how, in what esteem Rabban Gamliel held Rabbi Yeshua. He regarded him as being of a greater intellectual caliber, of being a greater chochem than Rabban Gamliel himself, but nevertheless he insisted on disciplining Rabbi Yeshua to accept Rabban Gamliel's psakim. So there's already a history of conflict between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabban Gamliel, but they still sit on the same base of Medrash. Life goes on. And now another conflict is about to live. And this sounds like a bit of a mischief maker, really, to Rabbi Yeshua and Rabban Gamliel, of all the people, to ask the shaylas, Rabbi Yeshua, and to tell Rabban Gamliel what Rabbi Yeshua said. But it's all fine. Let's see how it goes. Omar le'am tena shenichnasu ba'alei tresin v'resim. Shenichnasu ba'alei tresin, omad ha'shoel v'shoa. So when the people came in, the base of Medrash was now full, Rabban Gamliel got up and said any questions. His question was the first, the mischief maker. And he asked his question. Tfilas arvis v'shus o'choyv. Is tfilas mairi v'reshus o'choyv. Amalei Rabban Gamliel choyv. Rabban Gamliel said this is an obligation. Amalehem Rabban Gamliel lechachomim. And then Rabban Gamliel turned round to the chachomim and he said, Klum yesh adam shecholek v'davar hazeh. Is there by any chance anybody who disagrees with what I've just said? Amalei Rabbi Yeshua lav. Rabbi Yeshua, probably among the others, said, no, nobody disagrees. Yeshua is not going to pick an argument with Rabban Gamliel now. He says, I hear that you say it's Rishus, Rabbi Yeshua. He said, Yeshua, get up, stand on your two feet, and let anybody tell us here what you say on this matter. Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua stood on his feet, and he said, if I was alive, and the mischief maker was dead, I could say that he's telling a lie. Now we're both here to discuss the matter. I've got to be frank and tell you, yes, I do say it to Yeshua. Hoyo Rabban Gamliel, Yoshe the Dervish, Rabbi Yeshua Omed Araglo. So he punished Rabbi Yeshua, so to say, by making him stand right through the shir. Everybody else was sitting down, and he made Rabbi Yeshua stand. The punishment was probably in the sense that the younger Talmidim used to stand, the Talmidei Chachomim used to sit around, and the Talmidim used to stand, and he made Rabbi Yeshua stand to make it quite clear that he was a Talmid listening to the shir of the Rebbe. Ad sheronu l'kol ha'am v'amru l'chutzvi satur d'man amoy. The people couldn't take it any longer. It's just this conflict between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabban Gamliel had gone too far. And the people stopped. There was a Turgaman, he used to explain the shir. Rabban Gamliel used to give the shir. And there was a man who sat next to Rabban Gamliel, and Rabban Gamliel would tell his chavrusa, the Turgaman sitting next to him, and the Turgaman would explain it in a language that the Talmidim could understand. And I said to the Turgaman, hold on, just keep going. The Omad and he stopped. Amri Atama Natsare, the Nazir. How long are we going to allow Rabban Gamliel to make Rabbi Yeshua's life such a misery? The Rosh Hashanah Ishtakid Tzare. Last year Rosh Hashanah he caused him that trouble to go and walk to him on Yom Kippur. Bivachoris b'maisa the Rabbi Tzodot Tzare. There was another case in the Sechta Bichoris where the same kind of things happened. Hocha Nami Tzare. Now again he's causing him this trouble. Tzare Nadre. Let's get rid of Rabban Gamliel. Let's vote him out of office. Ma'anukim Lein. They discuss who to put in there. There's a discussion Rabbi Akiva. There's a discussion of Rabbi Yeshua himself, and they say that wouldn't be fair to Rabban Gamliel. That the man that is his batlut, so the man that's causing the argument should take over from him, that's an unnecessary embarrassment. That wouldn't be right. Rabbi Akiva is no good for other reasons, so they appointed Rabbi Loza ben Azariah. This brings us on to the Haggadah, you'll remember. So Rabbi Loza ben Azariah got a surprise. And he said, his immediate response was, Ezel ve'imlich be'inshei beis. Can we go and ask my wife? I'll go and ask at home about this. I'll tell you tomorrow. Azal the imlich b'dvisu. So he went to ask his wife. Amrulah, and she said to him, Dilman, avinach, you must be crazy to get involved in all this now. You shouldn't learn quietly. What do you have to get involved? Next thing, they'll kick you out. If this is the kind of atmosphere that there's, what do you want to get involved in? Amrulah, lishtamish inish yom echada bekisa demokra lemacha litva. You know, sometimes to use a beautiful glass, even once, and to throw the glass out afterwards, is also a pleasant experience. I'll be nosy for one day. It's not nothing to be nosy for a day. So she saw she was losing ground. The last thing she wanted is that her husband should be distracted with all the problems of Nisius. Omra Lester, she thought of a good idea. She said, Les lecho chivata. Don't be silly. You don't even have a single grey hair. They'll make your life miserable. You're young. You're a child. They'll never accept your views. They'll never accept you. How are you going to impose your attitude on them? You're going to have terrible trouble. Israchish le Niso, there was a miracle, the Ahadrule Tam Nisrei, the Ahadrule. Tam Yisrael Dari Chivato. And they came upon him 18 gray hairs. The people already saw that he was beginning to mature. Heine de Kom, Rabbi Loza ben Azariah, that's what Rabbi Loza ben Azariah means in the Brisa which is quoted in the Haggadah, Harei ani kevin shivin shana, I'm like a man of 70 years. I'm not 70 years in age, but I'm 70 years in maturity, and the truth is that the Rebbeinu Shalom saw it fit to give me the external appearance of an older man so that I should take over the Messias. Tana, we learnt, Oso hayom salkuhu l'shomer ha-pesach. This Rabban Gamliel, as we can see, was a strict disciplinarian. And altogether, there are two shitters in education, and he was very much of the strict shitter in another area too, which we're coming to now. On that day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah became the Nossi, the guard at the door was relieved of his job. The Nossi no lehim reshus l'talmidim l'kames, may let anybody come in. Sheyayor Rabban Gamliel machriz v'oimah, because Rabban Gamliel used to declare and say, kol talmid she'entoichu kebarei lo yikames l'beis ha'medish. Any talmid whose outside is not like his inside, in other words, any Talmud who is a fake, any Talmud is not genuine, any Talmud is not doesn't express himself as what he really is, shouldn't come into the Beis HaMedrash. In other words, Rabban Gamliel was selected on the basis of character, not on the basis of intellectual ability. Only Talmudim of fine caliber were allowed in, and the first thing that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah did when he became a Nossi, don't forget, he's a young man, a very young man, that also required tremendous power of commitment to one's own ideas on the part of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the first thing to reverse Rabbi Gamliel's policy of being selected. Then we're told that Rabbi Gamliel was very worried, because that day the numbers in the Beis HaMedrash increased tremendously, and Rabbi Gamliel didn't realize that there were that many people who wanted to learn, who couldn't learn because he stopped him. And he had a dream which convinced him that he wasn't wrong in what he did. But the important thing is the following. The Af Rabban Gamliel loimono atzmo mibeis ha-medrash. What's Rabban Gamliel going to do now? Open another yeshiva across the road? Move to another town and open a yeshiva? What's he going to do now? He's been humiliated. He's been deposed. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, a child, has been put in his place. There was talk of putting Rabbi Yoshua in his place, and they only didn't do it in order not to offend him. That means he's lost the battle completely. They voted him out on all his shittas and everything that he argued with Rabbi Yoshua over the years. His policy of education has been completely reversed. The whole place, it's not his Beis HaMedrash anymore. Nevertheless, we're told he didn't withhold himself from the Beis HaMedrash, afilu shor achas, not even one moment. As he got down from his chair at the top, he went down and he sat by one of the benches with the others and he carried on. It just doesn't sound like the same Rabban Gamliel. One would think that Rabban Gamliel, with all this purpose, Rabban Gamliel, with all this power, like we discussed this morning, the Oz and the Zimra, one needs the power and the strength, one needs the sensitivity, which one sees here. On the one hand, Rabban Gamliel, this uncompromising, firm disciplinarian, won't take any nonsense from anybody. In one day he's overthrown, and he sits at the feet of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, many, many years his junior. He sits and learns and accepts his views. It's funny. Now I'll show you the funniest Gemara of all, which is a very short one, you don't have to worry. The Gemara says in Yuma Daf Tafkimul Amud Aleph 23a that bear in mind the piece of Chumash we just learned. Kol Tamid Chochum She'eino Noikem V'Noiter K'Nachash Eino Tamid Choch. Any Tamid Choch who doesn't take revenge and bear grudges like a snake is not a Tamid Choch. And you remember we had another Gemara, a similar Gemara in Shabbos a while back. If you find the Talmid Chochem who's noikem v'noitek v'nachash chobleyo amosnecha, put him around your waist, stick by him. And if you find an Amhaoritz who's very polite and very pleasant and always nice to you, leave him to another subject. Now remember that Gemara, along the same lines, the Talmid Kol Talmid Chochem she'ena noikem v'noitek v'nachash she'ena Talmid Chochem. The Gemara goes on to discuss the conflict between that and the faucet in the second. But here again we see the double face, in a sense, this dual life that a Ben Torah has to live. On the one hand, there's an isur, a prohibition of severe consequence. Loisikoim veloisito, you're not permitted to bear a grudge, you're not permitted to take revenge. On the other hand, there's a certain aspect of that same middah, nekima and natira, which you're not permitted to have, which you need in order to be a Talmid Chochem. So it's very strange. There are two things. The principle to understand is that when one's learning Torah, one's not just studying a subject of some academic interest. What one is learning is the essence of the world around us, and one's learning al-manat la'atzot, one's learning in order to do. Therefore, everything you learn is going to change your life. And if what you're learning doesn't change your life, then you haven't learned right. Either you haven't learned with the right commitment, or you haven't understood correctly. But there should be no chazal that you hear. There should be no sugya of Gemara that you finish. There should be no halacha that you learn, or no piece of chumash that you've learned, that doesn't in some way change your life. Because otherwise you're wasting your time. The purpose of learning is to develop and to grow. And one grows by understanding the world around one in its essence that much clearer, and therefore adjusting one's behavior in accordance with one's new understanding of what the world is. Learning then becomes terribly urgent, because you have to reach the correct conclusion. If you get to the wrong conclusion, it can mess up your life. You can destroy yourself if your conclusion is incorrect. Imagine the atmosphere that must have prevailed in the Situation Room in the White House over the last couple of months, particularly over the last couple of weeks. There were those who said yes, and there were those who said no. But it wasn't just yes, should we or shouldn't we. There were those who said to do it is suicide, and there were those who said there's nothing but to do. And these people must have sat and argued and debated day and night. There must have been times when they wanted to pull each other's hair out. There must have been times when they would have been considered killing each other. There must have been, because each one must have believed that if we follow the other one's line, well, we can have a world war on our hands. And let's rather get rid of one fellow and get him out of the way and carry on and have the thing right. And those who believe that Iran should have been entered must have felt that way. And those who believe that Iran shouldn't have been entered must have believed that way. No one would have a place in the Situation Room if he felt neutral. Anybody who felt neutral on such an issue didn't have any place over there. Anybody who feels neutral about an attitude, about a halacha, about a hashkocha, it could be this way, it could be that way, it doesn't really matter. He has no place in the Beis HaMikdash. That means he's coming to, he wants to hear what's going on, he's interested more or less to hear the different views of the different rabbis and the Gemara. That's nice. You can go to university for that. That's not a place in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash is a situation. The Beis HaMikdash is a study of a situation which is going to direct our lives and change our lives with dramatic and almost irrevocable consequences. And now it becomes terribly important. Because now you have two Talmidei Chachamim arguing what the din is. It's not just an academic argument. This is now an argument which can change the world as far as they're concerned. They're involved in Kol HaOlam Kulo, they're involved in matters HaEn Din Berumo Shel Olam. They're discussing matters which stand right at the top of the world. There's nothing inconsequential, nothing irrelevant about what they're discussing. And that's why I said to you in the beginning, there's an aspect of Torah which, so to say, on the surface, encourages violence. Really, encourages violence. I'll show you the Gemara just now that says just that. The situation is so tense if it's real learning. If you really care about the result, if you really care about the consequence of your learning, the situation must be so tense if you don't understand what the other person's saying. Or if you disagree with what the other person's saying. You can't just say, okay, that's what you say, I say, it doesn't matter. It does matter. It's vital, and it's got to be sorted out, and one can't go to bed until it's sorted out. That's the situation we have in the Beis HaMikdash, which can lead to violence, certainly to heavy conflict. There's a Yerushalmi which learns this piece of Chumash with a beautiful touch to it. This is a Yerushalmi in the Dorim, in the 9th Perek, Halacha Dalet. Kesiv lo sikum v'lo sikores b'nei amech. Says in the Torah, you mustn't take revenge and you mustn't bear a grudge against your people. Ask the Yerushalmi the obvious question. How do you do it? All very well. Sikor and v'lo sikor, beautiful words. How do you do it? Somebody comes and burns your house down and you've got to go and love him the next day and offer him a new house. You've got to love him. V'ahavta l'reicha kamoicha. Somebody causes you agmas nefesh, somebody really causes you suffering, must you throw your arms around him and welcome him into your home? How do you do it? As a human being, how do you do it? So the Yerushalmi gives us an incredible formula, a little key with which to handle such situations. This is very simple. Avo mekatea kupa, if you were cutting a piece of meat, and the knife slipped and cut your wrist. Are you going to take the knife now in your left hand and cut your right hand because of what it did to your left hand? Just see yourself. Understand, and that's why it's in the same pasuk, that your friend is part of you. Okay, he's hurt you. Don't go and make it worse by going and hurting him too. Everybody's only going to suffer more. There's no point in it. Just see you and him as part of the same. You're part of one people. The Kuzari has a beautiful section which we'll learn sometime where he goes through the whole concept of the people being one body. And the same as you've got a hand which has certain functions, and you've got a foot which has certain functions, and a brain which has certain functions. So in a nation you have those same functions in the different people, but it's all one body. That's what the Yerushalmi says. This is normally taken simply as the method of handling a situation where somebody's done you harm, and you've got to build up the courage and the bigness to handle this correctly. So you think of the case of the meat. Okay, your hand's sore, but you don't go and cut your other. But one has to look at this one step further. What happens if your hand has been cut and it's infected, and now the existence of this hand is in fact threatening your other hand, threatening your whole body, and there's no doctor around? Then maybe you do have to take a knife in your other hand and cover it. Even though you've got to look, on the one hand, the Yerushalmi is talking about the situation of acting correctly towards people who have harmed you, the Yerushalmi at the same time is giving us a clue that it is sometimes necessary to wipe out people who are causing damage. And one can't allow one's romantic view of a tzaddik as being somebody who can't harm a fly. One can't allow that to get into the way of what is in the interest of Klal Yisrael, of the people, and of Torah in general. You'll remember Reb Shimon Shkop's definition of Kedusha. You're constantly involved in doing things for other people. You're busy learning, it's in the interest of the world that you should be busy learning. You're eating and sleeping, it's got to be in the interest of the world that you should be eating and sleeping. If something you're doing is not in the interest of the world, then it's selfish and it's egoistical and it's not acceptable, and it's against the principle of devotion to you. That is the principle of Reb Shimon Shkop, you remember. If one views one's activities in that sense, and one's able to look at the world as a whole, but one has to be incredibly grateful for this. But if you can conceive of that greatness where a man is able to view the situation like the knife, where he doesn't see he and the other person as adversaries, but he sees them as two limbs in the same body, and one is hurt. On the one hand, sometimes when the one limb is hurt, you don't go and hurt another limb for causing the trouble. On the other hand, if the limb is dangerously hurt and in fact dangers the rest of the body, sometimes the limb has to be hurt in treatment. If not amputation, but at least treatment which might be painful for a period. And these are two aspects of the what appears to be a double role. On the one hand, we're told lo sikra and lo sikra. On the one hand, we're told under no circumstances are you to revenge. On the other hand, we're told a Talmid Chochem that is Eina Noken, the Noten Tenachash is not a Talmid Chochem. But there are times when you've got it. On the one hand, we see Hillel who can't harm a fly. On the other hand, we see him teasing the B'nai B'Tzera when they really feel soft. Why does he do it? Because he knows. To tease them because they've done anything wrong to me, they haven't, I should be glad to them. It must have been incredibly hard for him to tease the B'nai B'Tzera in that situation. He didn't want that ever to happen again, that it should be necessary to import an anonymous person from Bavel to teach somebody in Eretz Israel again. And if in order to teach that he had to humiliate the B'nai B'Tzera in public, then just too bad. Hillel was the kind of person who could take such a decision. Hillel was on the stature and on the level that could take a decision to amputate an arm, or at least to treat an arm despite the pain and suffering that it's going to cause, because the whole body will be better afterwards. And Hillel understood that the whole of Torah in the world, never mind in Eretz Yisrael, would be better if this never happens again. And there's only one way to make sure that it never happens again. And that's to rub a bit of salt into the wound. Right now, when they're feeling sore, not tomorrow. Tomorrow they're feeling a bit better already. It's got to be now, when they're feeling at their worst. That's the time to rub the salt in, and it will never happen again. And that's got to rub in Gamliel. And Gamliel is as soft as any. Can you imagine a man softer? That he's just been kicked out of his position as Nossi by his adversary, and immediately he sits at the feet of the new Nossi, who's a young man in his teens. That's Rabban Gamliel, as soft as anything. Where does he get the strength to block the doors of the Beis HaMedrash to Talmidim he's not prepared to accept, to demand that Rabbi Yehoshua, who he regards as a greater man than himself, should come to him on the day which Rabbi Yeshua figures is Yom Kippur, to make Rabbi Yeshua stand up and to humiliate him in front of everybody. In Rabbi Gamliel's opinion, it was necessary for the existence of Torah, or for the development of Torah in his Beis HaMedrash, that even Rabbi Yeshua has to accept his day, has to accept the view of Rabbi Gamliel. Otherwise there's going to be halachic chaos, otherwise there's going to be halachic disorganization. And in addition to that, the concept that one is dealing with things of reality and one can't tolerate. It's not just a question, okay, so there'll be two views on the Beis HaMedrash. This is important. This is a situation which has to be clarified, and there has to be one halacha which is finally decided. The danger, of course, in this situation is that it could lead to anarchy if you don't have the right people. A Rabban Gamliel can do it. A Hillel can do it. But if one adopts this attitude that, yes, sure, one's not permitted to be Mokeim and Mokeh, one's not permitted to bear a grudge or to the wind, but on the other hand, there are times when in the interest of Torah and Yiddishkeit, one has to, and you've got to sometimes amputate an arm and it's just too bad. If one puts around such an idea, you know what harm can be done? All of a sudden you'll find people talking Lashon Hora in the name of Torah. It's in the interest of Torah that Lashon Hora should be spoken about this situation. You'll find people doing destructive things. You'll find people humiliating one another in the interest of Torah. All in the interest of Torah, it has to be done. Where does one find the boundary? How does one avoid? How does one make sure that when one does it, it's really in the interest of Torah that one's doing it, and that one isn't doing it merely because one feels bad, because one feels bitter? The last Gemara I want to bring you is a Gemara again, well known one in Kedushin Daf Lamed 30b. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said, Afilu ha'av uvnoi ha'rav v'talmida, even a father and son, or a rav and a talmid, she'oskin b'storo b'shar echol, who are learning Torah in the same Beis HaMedrash. Those are the two closest relationships that can exist between people. A father and son, a Rebbe and Talmud, learning Torah in the same Beis HaMedrash, ma'asim oyevim zeh, they become enemies of one another. Remember we said, when you're in a situation room, the environment must lead to tension, to conflict, almost to violence. They become enemies, oyevim. There's a continuation to it. The Einon Zazin Misham, and they don't move out of that Beis HaMedrash, not to go and eat and not to go and sleep. Achin Masim Oavim Zeh, until they become lovers of one another. That's the important thing. That one is able to be an enemy on a matter of principle, and to walk out afterwards with your arms around one another as individuals. The Gemara in Yevamos Daf Yudalet, the Mishnah, that talks about some of the machlokes in Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, and one of the particular ones that is discussed there is the fact that according to Beis Hillel, there are certain people who are mamzerim, who are not mamzerim according to Beis Shammai, and according to Beis Shammai, there are people who are mamzerim who are not mamzerim according to Beis Hillel. Nevertheless, says the Mishnah, there was intermarriage. One would think in such a case, you know, in some towns, if there are two shchitas, people don't need to meet from one shchita to the other. Can you imagine in a town where there are two registers of who's a mamzer and who's not? There would just be no intermarriage at all. No, chas v'shem. They married one another. How was it done? They used to tell each other. It used to be known, Beis Shammai would tell Beis Hillel, be careful of so-and-so, although we don't regard her as a mamzer or him as a mamzer, according to your shita, they are mamzerim and these are the people you mustn't marry, but the rest of the community is in order. You don't have to worry. Ask the Gemara further on, what does that tell us that? Obviously, if they would marry people they didn't know, they knew were not mamzerim according to their shita. Answer the Gemara to tell you how chavivim are you, the extent to which they were beloved to one another. Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, the generations of arguments between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, that the Mishnah comes to tell you, but don't think that interfered in one little way between the interpersonal relationships of a member of the school of Shammai with a member of the school of Hillel. Not only did they marry each other's daughters, but they were chavivim, they loved one another. There was tremendous love and tremendous warmth between the Talmidim of Beis Hillel and the Talmidim of Beis Shammai. And on the basis of this Gemara, there's a beautiful piece of the Bisroel Salanter who says that there are two things required in learning. The first is learning. And learning requires that each person adopts his position and fights for it to the bitter end. You can't have a position, you can't believe in something and claim that the halacha is A, and then somebody says, yes, but I think that halacha is B, and you say, okay, let's say B then. And why should we have an argument? You can't do that when you're in a situation. If you believe that the halacha is A and you've done the necessary work to come out that that's what the halacha is, and you believe that this is serious, that this is urgent, and that this is a matter that needs to be sorted out, you've got to fight it and fight it and fight it. But there comes a time when the fight's over. Either you convince him that you are right, or he convinces you that he is right, or you both understand one another's point of view and go different ways. Like Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel married women only that conformed to their specifications, and Beis Shammai married women only that conformed to their specifications. They never agreed. Neither Beis Shammai could convince Beis Hillel, nor Beis Hillel could convince Beis Shammai. It doesn't matter. So you agree to differ. But the chavivus, the love, has to continue. And that, says the Yisrael Salanter, is a measure of the lishma. The extent to which your learning is lishma. Because if your learning is to come to the correct conclusion, what difference does it make if his conclusion is right or my conclusion is right? If you're a Rabban Gamliel, and all you're interested is that the right thing should be done, what difference does it make if I'm the Nossi or Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is the Nossi? If the Beis HaMedrash has decided that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah has to be the Nossi, that's it, then we carry on. There's nothing personal about it. If you're a Beis Hillel, the fact that you know how to tease and you know how to be nasty when you have to be nasty, doesn't mean that one has to be nasty in all times. Each situation is given the measure that that situation requires, and that's the godliness of Hillel and the godliness of Rabban Gamliel. So that we see here that firstly, Torah is a tense situation. If one believes in the Torah, one's learning. And if one's done one's homework, that means one believes that one's conclusions are correct, then there's going to be a fight. And a Beis HaMedrash where there's no fighting is a Beis HaMedrash which is stagnant and which is dead. And a community where there's Tamid, not Tamidei Chachomim, who are arguing and who have issues and who are at each other's throats, who are not Oyevim Zedze, that's not a community, that's a stagnant community. But at the same time, there has to be a Lishma. One wants to come to clarity. And the clarity is either, I understand you but I don't agree, and I understand you but I don't agree, or the clarity is, okay, halacha seems to be like you, I withdraw, or halacha is obviously like me, you must now withdraw. That clarity is required if it's going to be lishmo. But while there's violence in the Beis HaMedrash, outside the Beis HaMedrash now, outside the Beis HaMedrash there's chavivu, there's warmth, there's love, there's understanding. And understand, by the way, why women aren't encouraged to be in the Beis HaMedrash. It should be a Beis HaMedrash as it is. The women would stand there and would become terribly upset about the way their husbands are being treated by others, and the arguments and the fighting that's going on, and look what they're doing, they're tearing him to pieces. And then she wouldn't be able to adjust. Afterwards they come out with their arms around each other. There's a situation of an argument which is an intellectual argument. It's an argument lishmo. It's an argument to reach the right conclusion, and in no way does it reflect the esteem that one person has for the other. And in fact, in their very argument, one will see the refinement with which they discuss it and the refinement with which they argue it. And that perhaps gives us a little bit of a better understanding into the situation of Lag BaOmer and the situation of Sphira. How could Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim have done it? The stronger you are in your learning, the more tendency there is to hold by your views and to wish to destroy anybody who holds any other views because you believe they're wrong. And the stronger you are and the more belief you have in your Torah, the greater is that tendency to want to destroy other opinions. But it has to be lishmo, the Yisrael Salanter says. There's a Gemara, there are two Gemaras, a famous contradiction which Tosfos discusses in many places. In the one place, the Gemara says, "L'olam yasa godam mitzvah mitzvahs afilu shelo lishma shemitzvah shelo lishma ba lishma." A person should do Torah and mitzvahs even if it's not lishma, because by so doing, ultimately, one day he'll come and do it lishma. And there's another Gemara which says, "Kol ha'osek b'Torah mitzvah shelo lishma." Anybody who involves himself in Torah and mitzvah shelo lishma, noach lo shelo nizah. It would be better that he was never created. Asks Tosfos, Sotrim, and Tosfos, and Brotus, how can that be? What are you meant to do then if it's not Lishmo? Answers Tosfos, there are two kinds of not Lishmo. It can be a not Lishmo where you're not learning just in order to get the conclusions and to know the halacha, you're learning to become a rov, or you're learning because you want some kind of honor, but that doesn't harm anyone else. That's harmless shaloi lishma. So your learning is not good learning. Your learning is not pure. But nobody else is suffering as a result of it. That's your own business. So carry on. One day you might get it right. There's another kind of learning, which is a learning lekanter. A learning to show the other guy that he's wrong. And that's not a learning. Not only is it not allowed, but neach lo shaloi nivla. Sometimes you get a shaila, but something's dropped into a dish, and you can say, take it out and you can eat the dish. And sometimes you get a shara, something is dropped into the dish, and you've got to say, you've got to throw the dish in. And the woman will ask, is there nothing we can do for dinner tonight? And I work the whole day to prepare it. And you'll think, and you'll say, nothing we can do. Why not? What's the difference? There's a concept in halacha of no same time. Once the issu, once the defilement has affected the food, there's nothing you can do to save the food. You've got to throw the whole lot. As long as you can take the pollutant out and your food is then left unpolluted, then you're allowed to do it. But the moment you've got nous and time, the moment there's some effect noticed in the food of the original pollutant, then you've got to throw the food out altogether. That's why we're so careful about gelatine. Although gelatine is used in very tiny quantities in food, its effect is felt throughout the food. You can see that it's made with that gelatine. The trachis is visible. You can see it clearly. You've got to throw out the food altogether. The person is Mechalel Shabbos, and he does tshuva, and he learns Torah. It doesn't affect his Torah. It's an aveira, which has to be corrected, which has to be worked on, and once that's happened, that's the end of it. And there are various aveiras, in fact, all the aveiras. Don't disqualify the Torah one's length. In fact, there are many Gemaras that talk about that, that even people have done tremendous aveiras. That which they've learnt and that which they've taught has been regarded with value, but not this one. If a person doesn't show kavod to his chaverim, if a person doesn't show kavod to his friends, the learning is crap. And the woman will say, but the dish is so good, it's perfect, there's nothing wrong with it, it's beautiful, I've never made one that's come out so well. And you've got to say, but it's not to be used. And these Talmidei Chachamim will say, but the world has never seen such brilliant learning. These 12,000 pairs of Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. But it has one piece of trait which is unlike other traits. And it's a trait which is almost inherent in learning. It's the most difficult thing to guard against, because the greater you are, the more the tendency is to import this little pollutant. And they unfortunately had it. They're unfortunately on their great level. We don't understand exactly how it happened. But somehow they had it, a tiny little bit of this jealousy. A little tiny spot of it. Nobody could see it. You could see the effect of it. The learning became trait. The learning could not be accepted any longer. Why? Because of the counter. Shaloi lishmo, according to the Bisrael Salanta, if you can't make peace with your chavrusa after you've argued, that's shaloi lishmo. And what kind of shaloi lishmo is it? Not the shaloi lishmo where you want to become a rov, where you want to become honored, but it's the shaloi lishmo of lekanter. And we've told in the Gemara, noach lo shaloi nivro, you're better off never coming into the world, because whatever you contribute to the world is going to be traced. Whatever you give the world is not going to be worthwhile, and in fact is going to be harmful for the world and not in the interests of the world. That's the shaloi lishmo that it is. And so they had to be taken away, and we lost all that Torah that they developed, and all that Torah that we had was lost, and we had to start again with Rabbi Akiva and his 500 men. And one wonders where the Sfira is only a period of mourning for those 24,000 Talmidim, because that it certainly is. The fact that these Talmidim fell into this trap is an indication of their greatness as Talmidei Chachomim. The fact that there was a speck of this little dust, that can happen. That they must have been incredibly great, that among the 24,000 there were none that were able to get away from it. Each one of them felt so strongly about his views and saw such urgency in his views that he resented anybody who disagreed with him. That too is a tremendous madrega, is a tremendous standard. And one wonders, are we merely mourning the 24,000, which is something to mourn about? Or is it a warning here? Just before Shavuot. This is the time we're getting ourselves ready for Kabbalah HaTorah, we're getting ready to receive the Torah. We're trying to learn a little bit more than we learn normally. We're trying to institute new programs of learning. to progress a little bit quickly, more quickly, with a little bit more clarity, and to move and move towards Kabbalah, Torah, and Shavuot. Perhaps it's not coincidental that Sfira lands between Pesach and Shavuot. And it's a warning now. Be careful. In the Beis HaMidrash, there's one Aveira to be careful more of than anything else. You have to be careful of everything. But everything else doesn't make your learning track. If you've done something wrong, it doesn't make your learning track. You have to do tshuva for what you've done wrong and you carry on where you left off. But there's one Aveira which actually pollutes your learning. And that's not giving cover to one another. That's not having the ability to respect another person's views and to feel personally for him, close and chaviv and very dear. And that answers the very first question with which we set out. How does one know? Very simple. You take a person as part of an opinion and you watch him carefully in a situation where he's humiliated, but it has no halachic effect. If a man is humiliated and that has halachic effect, a Talmid Chacham or a Rav is humiliated, he has to take revenge. He has to see that it's sorted out, because that's against Kavod HaTorah, the Torah that's being humiliated. But watch this individual in a situation where he's humiliated and it has no effect as regards halacha. See if he gets angry. Rabban Gamliel, look how he's humiliated. No anger. That's no difference. Because there's no halachic effect of his humiliation. It was correct. He deserves to be humiliated. He was humiliated. But there's nothing to get angry about. There's nothing to feel upset about. There's nothing to get horribled about. How can one then say of a Rabban Gamliel that maybe his own feelings influence his halacha? Maybe his environment influences his decision? Can you imagine a man under more pressure to react against the din than when you've been humiliated like Rabban Gamliel was? And Afilu Shah Achas, not one moment did he wait before he came and sat at the feet of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And so we have, I didn't want to spend time going through many such examples in the Gemara, and there are many, many situations which carried on after the time of the Gemara, with the Rishonim, with the Achronim, until the present day, of people who are great enough to be able to react al pi halacha even under the most severe personal tensions and stresses. And those are people that one can be sure in no situation are going to be affected by their own view of things and their own outlook of things when it comes to halacha. That in fact is the psak of the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Talmud Torah. The Rambam is just talking about turning the other cheek. He says that's what you've got to do basically. The Zuhi Darkam Shel Talmidei Chachomim Shiroi Leilech Bo, says the Rambam right at the end, and this is the way of Talmidei Chachomim, don't worry about the Gemara, he'll come to that. This is the way of Talmidei Chachomim that you should go. Absolutely turn the other cheek. Shomim Che Posom Veinam Meshivim, you can hear somebody insulting you and you don't even answer. V'lo Oid Ela Shemoichlin Lamechadet V'solchim Loi, like the story we had with the Chofetz Chaim earlier, you go after him, you tell him, I'm Moichel, I forgive you, and this is the way of Talmidei Chachomim. V'amed Vorim Amurim Tishibi Zuhu Ochir Pahu B'Seter, that applies only if it's been done to a Talmidei Chachomim in private, nobody else knows about it. But Talmid Chachomim Shibizahu Ochir Chofu Adon B'Farhesya, if a Talmid Chachomim has been insulted in public, Osur Lo Limchol Al Kvoido, he's not permitted to be Moichel, he's not permitted to forgive. The Mochar Me'enash, and if he does, he's punished. Shezei Bizoyon Torah, because that's a bizoyon, that's a humiliation of the Torah. Ela Noikein V'Noiter Hadover Kenachash. And here the Rambam gives a shot in that Gemara that we just had. That he's got to have Noikein and Noiter, he's got to take revenge and bear a grudge like a snake. Achi Yevakesh Mimenu Mechilo V'Yislach Lo, until the person asks for Mechilo and he forgives him. Otherwise there can be no forgiving. Here we see, in fact, almost the definition of a Talmid Chacham. A Talmid Chacham is who, when it's personal, Shemeach Chachosim Be'en Mashiach. You hear that, you don't even answer. You're Moichel, you forgive the person who insulted you. You feel nothing. When it's Torah, when you're talking about the good of the world, when you're talking about views in Torah, and about Halacha, and about Kovod HaTorah, make you become absolutely uncompromising in demanding the Kovod that the Torah requires. And just in final conclusion, why Kenachash? Why must it be Noikem the Noikem Kenachash? Like a snake. So when does a snake take revenge? What's the concept of the revenge that a snake takes? There are two things about a snake. The one thing is the Mashos is the one. The Klolo, the curse of the snake, is that when human beings attack a snake, they attack his head. And when a snake attacks a human being, he attacks the ankle. Okay, we won't go into why the snake does that, but that's also an interesting concept. But that's what the Maharsha says. One has to know when a Talmud Chacham does attack, don't emasculate, don't bring the person down, don't attack him in the place which is his greatness, don't degrade him in a way that he can never recover. A snake doesn't go through your head. You know, a person can lose a leg, chas v'sholem, but he can get around, he's not degraded. He has to limp around, he can have crutches, he can do what has to be done. But if a person loses his mind,